Welcome back, everyone, to Judging Nerd Culture, where we talk about all the good and the bad parts of everything you love and hate. I'm Raul Alejandro Gonzalez Enriquez, and my co-host is...
I'm Coop, or Pookie, you know, whatever you want.
Whatever. So today we're talking about a enigma of a game, I'd say.
Yes.
Called Let It Die.
Let It Die. This is a weird one. It, I imagine, might have put people off if you were just scrolling through the PlayStation Marketplace or Steam or whatever, because it's free, and our associations with video games that are free on the surface but contain inside purchases are usually negative. Like, the assumption is just that that's going to be the kind of thing where, you know, you get very little game before they start, you know, ringing the bell and aiming to collect your money. We are here, I think, you know, unless Ollie's going to surprise me, to give a pretty ringing endorsement. You get a lot of really enjoyable, good stuff in this. Like, you never need to spend a dime in this game and to still have a good, challenging, but a good time.
Yeah, and despite our endorsement, this is not for everyone.
Oh, no. Like, we like this kind of thing, like, mutually, and our spheres of game enjoyment do not often overlap, but this is the type of thing that really scratches the itch for both of us, I think, as far as what you do with your hands.
Yes. So, you know, let's just talk about it. It's a looter shooter.
Yeah, pretty much. a hack and slash, an arcade-style hack and slash, but with collect fucking everything elements going on.
Yeah, it's really funny to me because this is a primarily PvE game. Even the PvP aspects of it have no, like, actual people that you interact with. So it's a pretty solitary sort of game. And for a PvE game, this has the least amount of story of any of them.
It, and you know, I think, like, they do very little and very early, and I think that sets them up for a really, really good, like, cohesive, like the story that there is works really well with what you're doing in the game. Like, it's not, you know, revolutionary, it's not mind-blowing, it's not even, like, I said the same thing about Doom, and that is, like, far and away, you know, a more story-driven experience than this, which is weird to say. But if you don't mind, I'm going to give, like, a rundown of the plot and the principal characters and set the tone, because it's a tone that I really enjoy, and make it clear, you know, part of what makes this so likable. So in the near future, technology level is not really a thing. The planet Earth is stricken by an Earth Rage, which is a tectonic event. You don't play through any of this. You know, this is all the backstory. You have to kind of dig to get this. But essentially, it has caused, like, big pieces from all of the continents to just smash together into a huge tower that ascends into the sky called the Tower of Barbs. And anytime there's a tower in a video game, you gotta go to the top. That is basically the plot, is you run into Uncle Death, who talks with a weird accent that I'm not going to attempt to imitate, but I'll put in a little bit of it right here.
I was waiting for you. This is your first time riding line 15, huh? I know, it's not a very well-known line, I admit. Anyway, this is the last stop.
I can hear it in my head, and I want to try to imitate it, but I can't right now. All I know is that it's a, like, what was it? Is a native Finnish-speaking person.
Yes.
Trying to do a Mexican accent in a Japanese game.
Yeah. Well, the Japanese game, he's speaking English. I mean, I assume they do for all the languages, so who knows, like, how they sound in different languages, but...
Point is, there's many layers of, like, that sounds like something familiar, no idea what's going on there.
And so, yes, you receive your introduction from Uncle Death.
I forgot to mention, my name is Uncle Death. I have a feeling we're gonna get along just fine.
And you, as an entity in this game, are multiple things. You're sort of playing a game within a game, but you're, like, your actions within the game are definitely impacting the real world, as insofar as it matters. So yourself is in an arcade, sitting at a table with Uncle Death playing his new hot video game. And this is like a Grim Reaper with weird 3D glasses on. He's a skeleton man. He's got a scythe which can transform into a golf club sometimes. He rides a skateboard frequently.
Got a real cool peacoat.
Yes. Yeah. It's a more stylish version of the rags, you know, black outfit, but...
And a real high-tech scythe.
Yes. Yeah.
Dig it.
This is a great introduction, I think. Like,
because it starts off with, like, it does the, here's the cinematic lore exposition, and then you pick a body and get thrown out of a train, and Beth is just like, hey, senpai.
Yeah, that's close enough. I'll get some clips thrown throughout here. So this character is really good, and I think it sets a good stage for like, don't worry too hard about it, you know?
Oh, yeah, very lax, very laissez-faire.
Mm-hmm.
And like, he just tells you, hey, so here's the shtick, you gotta get to the top, get the power of God or whatever nonsense, and let's have some fun.
Yeah, let's just go to the top of the tower and see what happens, man, you know?
Yeah.
Not a big deal. And you alluded meaning said that you pick a body. So, like, fighter bodies are regularly transported into the tower via a subway. And when your arcade game playing character plays the game in the game, you sort of download in to one of these warrior bodies. You would start off just basically naked with spandex shorts, sports bra if you pick a female body.
And no matter which one you pick, the shorts are just a little too short around the top, showing a weird amount of butt crack.
Yes.
That's just a weird design thing.
I think it's fair to say, and this is in a comedic way, that everything you do in this game is extremely undignified. And I think that, like they set the stage for it, like, everything. You know, even when you're doing combat really cool, it is still, like... You're probably wearing just a scrapped together outfit from a bunch of bullshit you find lying around, and it's all silly. Even though the art style is very, like, gross, grimy. Like, it looks like this tower would if it were just smashed together from dingy urban buildings crushed into being these arenas.
It really has... a similar aesthetic to Dark Souls and Bloodborne in the sense of, like, that game series went from, with the Dark Souls being sort of medieval and then towards a Victorian style. If it continued on to modern, this is sort of what it would look like.
Yes. Yeah. Real, like, sad and decayed. But the whole thing, you know, the whole tone of it twists a little bit because of how, like, goofy all of the framing stuff is on the way in.
Yes, I do recall playing a section of the game and feeling I looked pretty cool, but I didn't have enough stuff to, like, continue my armor. And eventually, my pants got broken, and I was just wearing some dumb shirt that barely covered my butt and a fucking traffic cone on my head.
Yeah.
While I had two big-ass swords.
Or yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, the basic gameplay loop here is you have a tower. You gotta climb the damn thing. There is a home base at the bottom of the tower. We're gonna talk about that after the fact, because the very first thing you do in the game is they just send you in and say, hey, go fuck around in this tower, tutorial style.
Plus, the home base has a lot more impact to just kind of, like, your downtime slash your, I don't know, like, strategy.
Yeah, preparation. And you need... eventually to do preparation in this game, like, a ton, you know, if you want to succeed, it, you know, as with free-to-play things, it turns up the difficulty crank at a certain point. By the time I got there, I was really stoked about it. Like, yeah, this is hard, but I know what I'm doing and I enjoy the feel of it in my hands enough to, you know, power through. I might throw him a buck at some point to get the, you know, the bonus thing, just because I definitely feel like I've had a dollar of fun with this game so far. But
I actually have spent some money on it. I'm not going to get too far into it because we can talk about the monetization the home base thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I've spent maybe $4, $5, I think, because of some sales and some, like, hey, you're a first-time player. Here's a thing you can buy once, and it gives you more than usual. So I have, like, 30-ish of the, like... platinum currency.
Yeah.
That I got for $5.
Mm-hmm.
And that's gonna take me probably through the majority of
the game. Yeah. It's what you get for the payment is extremely generous, I think. Like, it's very useful. You know, everything you can spend it on is a pretty good, you know, way to spend it. And I just appreciate that they're modeling the whole thing after an arcade, the original video games, which were also the original pay-to-win video games, you know? like that's, you know, if you continue, put in a quarter, that's pretty much what you're doing with this currency. You know, its main use is just to revive you when you die, and you will die frequently, and you don't need to put in a coin every time. But in any case, yeah. So you climb the tower. There are 40 floors, but each floor has multiple possible versions of itself. Not all of them, but...
Yeah, each floor, you know, it's a level. Level one. Mm-hmm. That level has multiple rooms in it. Multiple floors you can show up into.
Depending on how you come in from below or from above sometimes, determines which room you get into. And the tower itself, other than anything that is aligned with the spine of the tower, like, there are central rooms that will always stay in position. And those have an elevator. Once you reach the elevator, you can activate it, and then you can always just ride back up to that floor. So those are, like, your checkpoints. But spaces in between will vary depending on the day. Like, there are multiple rotations the tower can be in, and it will affect your path up depending on when you play, which is just an interesting tidbit to keep you coming back. Like, if you just really beat your head against trying to reach the next elevator one day, you could come back the next day and find it is nearly effortless with the new rooms you're going through.
Yeah, last time I had to go through 7 floors to get to this one. This time it's 2.
I hope that 7 is an exaggeration. Like, I would believe that would happen, but...
it's not an exaggeration. I actually haven't gotten past it. Mm-hmm. Because there was a bunch of floors I had to get to get to the top because the main travel points were locked from my side.
Oh, sure.
But then I went through and it was locked from the other side. The rotation that I was in just had no way to go any farther up.
Yeah. Sometimes that might happen, you know. Yes. And that's not in the beginning stages. Like, everything, floors, it's segmented. So floors 1 through 10, 10 through 20, 20 through 30, 30 through 40 are all their own biome. Like, you start in a 10-floor-long sewer level, which, again, if this game were trying to be harsh and serious at the beginning, I might just be like, this is too fucking bleak for me. But the fact that I could then, I was in on the joke of my stupid character doing stupid shit in a sewer, like, made it more palatable. But you start getting into better environments too as you go along.
Yeah, I believe the first 10 floors are, like you said, a sewer. After that is a, you know, a boss. Then you go into the metropolitan zone.
Yes.
It's just chill little city zone. Mm-hmm. And then the next 10 floors, 20 to 30, are like Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah, spooky carnival themed. And I believe the final set is like, they just say fuck it and put you in like a Japanese castle. we should disclose now, we haven't finished this game yet. Canada. It would take an eternity to do so. We have absorbed all of the major systems, and like, I, you know, our waiting rooms are filled out with shops. Like, I don't think they're gonna throw any curveballs at us. We know what we need to know to talk about it, and, you know, we like it. I don't think anything could happen from this point forward that would make me hate the game suddenly. Like, it's explained what it is, and I've accepted it.
Yeah, I've already run against the biggest, like, detractor. And that's just the random rotation possibility.
Right.
And even that's not too bad.
Yeah, it's whimsical. Again, like, they set the tone early to where anything that happens, I'm just like, fuck it, okay. I mean, I guess that's, you know, if I die, generally I can laugh it off, and that's fine. We should... So, okay, as you're moving along, like, a major fixture, like, you need this to survive, you need to mind this system, is that you run into critters and mushrooms as you go along, because this is, you know, it still is a place in the world, like, it's just infested with weird creatures and mushrooms that you can or cannot eat at your leisure. And these will do, like, the mushrooms are just power-ups / grenades. Like, many of them you throw and will explode and or cause a gas or an electric shock. You know, they're offensive. And others will give you boosts.
Yeah. You can eat all of them, and if they do bad things, they will do bad things to you if you eat them.
Yes. So, and or you could throw good ones at your enemies if you just felt like you weren't having a difficult enough time.
So yeah, be mindful of which button you press by accident.
We have gotten pretty invested playing on the PS4. you might want to consider doing this on Steam or something, though, because the PS4 controls for using and throwing items uses the damn touchpad on the controller that is, like, not precise enough for me to really strongly consider using mushrooms in fights. Like, yeah. Sometimes I will if I have gotten the sneaking up advantage on the enemies or something, but...
Yeah, and the main issue with the with that control isn't the activation and use of the mushroom. It's that to select a mushroom, you swipe left or right to move the item over to pick which one you're going to use. And the sensitivity on that doesn't seem to be adjustable. As I slide my thumb across, it'll move over 4 mushrooms.
Yeah.
At which point I'm like, oh, I wanted the grenade, not the poison.
Yeah. It's not something you can really feasibly do in the middle of fights. If you think you're going to use a mushroom, you should swipe to it preemptively.
Exactly.
There are also animals, which most of the time, I think 100% of the time, when you pick up an animal, it is your healing items.
Yes.
Like, in the beginning stages, you grab a frog, and if you're hurt right there, you can just chow down on that frog. Like, eat the whole thing in a few bites while it lives. And it's not, like, super gruesome, but it is definitely just, like, again, the tone.
I don't think it's even, like, it's not even displayed as gruesome as the play, like, as you do it, there are sparkles and shining things that come out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's the blood and
semi-censored
goo, but it's really funny.
Yeah.
Honestly.
You can also stomp animals or kill them with your weapons if you really feel the need. And each type of animal spawns a mushroom when it dies from its corpse. Those have different effects, too.
Yeah. You mentioned weapons. I don't realize we never talked about how you actually get weapons and what...
Right. Yeah, we should get a little into... So, third-person action game. The weapons that you find are all... Like, you alluded to this earlier. Your equipment is all breakable. So, finding a weapon or purchasing it is a temporary upgrade at best. There are ways to get things permanently. We'll talk about... Or access to weapons permanently. We'll talk about later on. But in the beginning, you're just punching dudes and scavenging what they have when you kill them.
Yep, it's just bare-fisted. You walk in originally pantsless, shirtless, with no weapons. You start punching dudes until they drop whatever weapon and random piece of clothing they have on, and you keep going forward. Each time you kill someone, maybe getting a slightly better weapon, maybe getting a little more clothing, until eventually you keep using that item until it breaks.
Yeah, and everything you scavenge is, like, halfway down in its durability already, so it is fun to run in nude and just, you know, punch the first guy, take whatever they have, and, you know, keep it going, and in the early stages, that's all you can do.
And it's actually a pretty viable strategy in the first few chunks, because as time progresses, each item, including your fists, can level up so that you can do more damage and new attacks and so on and so forth, and, unlike your bodies, which get destroyed whenever which way, that improvement stays with the player.
Yeah, your experience with weapons is permanent, so it doesn't hurt to get, like, a few levels up on the weapons that you're gonna find in the area that you're fighting in, because, and we should say, the definition of weapons in this game is very generous. Like, it's only once you get a ways in that you are consistently finding guns and blades and stuff. In the early stages, we have circular saws, red hot irons, like clothing irons. There are
fireworks.
Firework launchers, nail guns, just good old-fashioned baseball bat. Occasionally, and I really like the expectation this sets, because later on when it is like, oh shit, this guy has a sword. Like, that's a really big deal. Whereas a sword is just the stock standard-ass equipment in most other, you know, games with swords. You're probably going to have a sword in the beginning.
And it gets even more entertaining because as, you know, you go through, this guy has a sword, it's a pretty big deal at first. And then it becomes less of an issue, and they're like, oh, this guy has drill arms.
Yeah, yeah. The high-tech stuff shows up later on as well. And then, you know, it's just constantly, like, you get to witness enemies using goodies that you don't have yet before you ever get a chance to try them.
And if you do decide to try this game, when you see an enemy with a new weapon, my recommendation is run straight... No. Avoid them for a few moments.
Be very careful. Try to play it safe. Dodge away. You know, block if you can remember that you can block in this game. And it's really good. I just never remember. I'm always like, why take any damage when I could take none? But
yeah. every weapon has a real unique movement to it, and there's enough weapons that you can that'll be hard to remember, you know, every movement set, but still plausible. And some of them are so odd or so advantageous that you need to remember them or you're gonna get murdered.
Yeah. And even what I really appreciate, though, is that even early game weapons don't drop off in usefulness. Like, I will still bring in a circular saw with me as I move ahead, and, you know, leveling it up early in the game helped me out, you know, with that staying relevant. There are other means you need to make sure that your weapons don't drop off. Like, they take some maintenance, which we'll talk about eventually, but it is the type of thing where there's definitely, you know, I know, like, okay, I went to this floor and I got fucked up. Next time I'm going to bring a sniper rifle and a machete and a this and a that. Like, you can acclimate to the enemies you're likely to fight.
Yeah. And that is honestly the main loop. It's just, you go in, get stuff, keep going higher until you can't, and then try to get your body back and do it again.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. So, one of the big constraining factors for this, why you can't just stockpile arms and armor, is that you have a pretty tight equipment capacity. Like, you can only carry so many items, and that's another part of the risk-reward, is the farther ahead you push, you pick up more valuable items and goodies that you'd like to keep. You know, you risk losing it all when you die. And also, you know, you risk having your equipment filled up before you reach the elevator. So there's oftentimes like a, should I just run back and be safe and save these things? Or should I press forward, dropping my armor to pick up this, you know, rare blueprint I found or whatever? And, you know, the risks it encourages. Like, sometimes you're like, damn this inventory system, damn it to hell. But it wouldn't work without it.
Yeah, it definitely causes a sense of desperation that has led me to, like, I can't leave things I don't know what it, if I don't know what it is. If it's a blueprint that I haven't seen, and it could be any weapon or armor, I need to get that back to my base to figure out what it is. So a number of times I've dropped all things that I own to keep whatever it is that I have on me so I can take it back with me. And part of me is like, I'm so close to the next elevator that I'll just keep going forward through the next three floors, thinking, I'll get there eventually, just running past enemies and hoping I don't have to fight any of them.
Like, your fists are no joke. Like, they're not better than weapons. You know, the damage just doesn't compare. But if you are stuck in a situation and need to fight with your fists, if you stay tough, have good reflexes, you know, you can make it through. Like, if you level them up, they will serve you.
And you can level them up pretty decently in the earlier stages. Earlier?
What? Yeah.
Earlier stages, because no matter what floor you're on, the enemies give the same amount of experience.
Yeah. Your weapons always level up at a steady rate, so if you fight a bunch of weak guys, it is as effective as the same number of strong guys for your weapons. Not for your, like, main level and stats and stuff, but so that's really handy, you know. If you go back through early levels, just punch dudes and save your resources, or try out a weapon that's weaker. When you get killed in the Tower of Barbs, and this is like a mystical property of the place, like characters talk about it sometimes, but your body will rise up and become a hater. And every floor has a hater. It's either yours or, like, sometimes there you run into the same one enough times that you can tell, oh, this is like a default one that, like, that was built by the developers. But most haters you fight are from other players who have died on that floor. There is also a means to send one of the bodies you're not using, we'll get to it, out into the levels and become someone's hater on purpose. You're trying to hunt them, but for the most part, it's just the fallen have risen. And if you fall, you need to grab a new body from the fighter depot and send it out to kill and reclaim the one you lost.
So, this has never happened to me, but if you died.
Yes.
And you had no bodies available to you, and also no gold.
Mm-hmm. The level one basic ass body is always free. So you can't like get into a losable state. As you adventure through the tower, you unlock the ability to create better and stronger bodies. And they have like sort of classes. It's not like they have special abilities or anything, but you start around with just the all-rounder, who's pretty good at whatever stats. Then you can eventually get into, like, the striker does better with melee, and the shooter does better with ranged attacks, and there's a few variations to that. But they all pretty much look the same, you're just choosing from different aesthetic options. The collector is far and away my favorite kind, because its specialty is merely having super huge carrying capacity. So for lower risk missions, you can send it in and gather a bunch more stuff than usual.
I find that I like the collector as a main body, even more so than like any of the attacking or whatever
sure.
bodies, because despite its specialization being, you know, gear and getting more of it, it has more health than the body designated to have a lot of health and attack.
Yeah.
And it has comparable attack to most, to more attack than the majority of the bodies for physical stats and average for, like, distance-based stats.
Yeah.
It is basically just a better all-rounder.
Yeah, it's really good. Like, if you are in serious doubt playing this game over what to make, just make the next level up of collector as your top priority for sure. Like, it's perfectly serviceable at fighting. The other bodies, eventually you start getting into higher end weapons that have high stat requirements, like you just need however much dexterity to use the next assault rifle or whatever, and making a shooter can help you qualify for that earlier. But ultimately, once you max out on your collector, you know, they're pretty much good to go. Like, you will hit the cap with your bodies decently quickly. It is encouraging you to, like, you know, make the next level up stronger bodies and level them up from square one, which takes some time, not a ton of time. And when you have more bodies lying around on hooks in your fighter freezer, which is one of your facilities, you can do different things with them. We'll talk about that later on. But I think but when one of your bodies dies, you need to bring in a new one. This is a type of thing that can get frustrating if that was, like, your highest level super being body. But, A, if you don't feel like it, you can just pay a pretty large amount of coins, just basic currency, not, like, premium currency, to get your body back. And even if you do have to go fight them, you're always going to be better than a computer. Like, generally, as long as you play careful, you already know the weapons that body's going to be using, and, you know, outsmart them, you'll be fine.
Yeah. you can use platinum currency to get your body back.
Right.
But it's honestly a pretty trivial amount for the platinum currency, but I would just recommend using the gold in general.
Yeah, yeah. The only difference is when you die, you will always just lose the shit you had on your body unless you use the death metal, that's the platinum currency, to get your body back, and then you keep all of the stuff that was on it. So if you had, like, 6 blueprints, it could be worth it to do that, but in general, you know, it doesn't matter much.
Actually, no, I think that's incorrect.
Really?
So if your body dies while you're, you know, out in the dungeon, and then you get your you come back to life in your other body to do whatever. If you go out to get it by defeating yourself and bringing your body back, you'll lose all of your items.
Uh-huh.
But if you pay Uncle Death to get your body back,
mm-hmm.
either with the platinum or with the gold,
or with regular money,
yeah, you keep your stuff.
See, I thought that was only the case in the early floors. They make it easier on you, and you can just, hey, get your body back for free if you want. But otherwise, it does take either money or medals. So it's the free way that you lose your items.
Yes.
It's the paid way, either paid way, you get your stuff back. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That makes the damn near prohibitive cost of paying for it at that point much lighter on me.
Yes. Which is why when I die, instead of going back for my body, I just death metro until I have enough gold.
Yes, raise some money. So we've tiptoed around it long enough. We should get into, and I'm gonna start kind of rapid firing through the facilities here. You know, we'll go back and forth.
Yeah. You know what a great facility that we need to talk about is?
Right.
The self-promotion corner.
Self-promotion corner. That's my favorite facility. So if you have enough kill coins to spare, you should... No. You opened the door. Now I'm walking through it.
Okay.
You can help sustain our bodies and make them stronger by going to patreon.com/deltacryptidproductions. Even but $1 a month would help us an enormous deal in purchasing equipment just in case ours breaks, you know, and improving our show, improving what you get to hear.
It also boosts morale. Yes. Knowing that our listeners are supporting what we're doing lets us know that this is what we need to do more of.
But it's not just that abstract of an exchange. For $3 a month, you get bonus episodes for every main episode of Judging Nerd Culture. We also put out a briefer, but more free-form remix where we say, hey, what would we do with this property? How would we make our own? And those are always a blast for us to make and hopefully a blast for you to listen to.
Oh, yeah. We have a couple of, you know, demos of those out in the for the public eye. Maybe in another few X-many episodes, we'll put out another one to
some freebies
to keep people, you know, tasting.
Scroll back a bit, check them out, they're good.
Yeah. There you can go even further if you're willing to pay $10 or more. You can start suggesting episodes, being a guest on said episodes, or any episode, I suppose, but
right. Yeah, yeah. I guess you don't technically have to be a guest on the one you pick the topic for, but you can pick a topic, you can be a guest, be our guest to do these things.
You can also basically buy an advertising spot through this at, believe, $10 a month. We'll say any message you require us to.
I think it's a little cheaper than that even, I think. I forget exactly.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
Hey,
it's on the
Patreon.com/Delta Cryptid Productions. Or absolutely free. Follow us on Twitter at Cryptid Delta. We'll keep you updated on the things we do, the things we say, things we think, things we love.
Yeah, you can communicate with us there or literally anywhere. I'm sure if you go onto our Facebook, Cryptid Delta, Cryptid Delta Cryptid Productions.
Yes.
Why do I keep saying it backwards?
It's all good.
I'm thinking too much of Twitter.
These links are all going to be in the episode description. Check them out. Write to us. If you like Let It Die or, you know, if you started playing it because of us, we'd like to know. That'd be great.
Yeah. All right. Last thing. Critical. Rate us on iTunes. Let us know how you feel.
It's a big deal. Thank you so much if you rate us on iTunes. We check it every once in a while. Neither of us are native iTunes users. So if you leave us a review and we don't immediately talk about it, we record these a little ways in advance. We might not have noticed it right away. You leave us some patience, but also leave us 5 stars.
Heck yeah. And that's all I got.
Yeah. Groovy. All right. Let's head back into the tower. You know, we've spent enough time dicking around in the arcade of the self-promotion corner. We gotta go. Let's go in. So,
what's your other favorite room?
My favorite. Okay, that might change. Nah, it's probably the same. In the order of in which I wrote the notes. So the very first mission you do, you liberate the Mushroom Matriarch, who is a character design that needs to be seen to be believed, I think. She is a mushroom lady, so
like
to speak.
A zebra-striped mushroom stripper.
Yes, definitely. Like, her garments are see-through and yet covering nothing. She doesn't seem to have anatomy, really, other than just a human-like shape. But she runs the mushroom place, which doesn't really have much to do with the mushrooms you actually find. There is a cooking pot out in front of her store that is extremely useful. Any animal you cook will heal way more health. Any mushroom you cook just has a much stronger version of its effect. So that's even kind of a risk-reward. If you find something in the tower, you can use it right there, or you can wait until you can get back home or to another fire in the tower somewhere. There are even weapons that cause fires if you really wanted to get creative, but cooking stuff makes it more powerful. And the Mushroom Matriarch will allow you to put stickers on your body that give you just passive perks and benefits, like...
Yeah, they're called decals.
Yes.
And some of them are, you know, pretty generic, just increase health, increase strength, increase whatever, or decrease the stat requirement of certain weapons.
Yeah. Those end up getting very useful, actually, later on when you start getting really high-end gear and lower, you know, lower-level bodies.
Yeah, so that it makes it possible to get, you know, a new body starting at level 1, not having the stats to use all of your good weapons, but you still want to. Mm-hmm. You can slap that on and get right to it.
Yeah, you can purchase temporary stickers that, like, only last until either you take them off or you die with that body. And then, you know, they're pretty cheap, but you have to deal with that they're gone for good once they're used up. There are various ways to get premium stickers, which do not have that restriction. There's no way to permanently lose them. Yes. And those are extremely valuable to have. You can pay what, at the beginning of the game, is a pittance of money when they're throwing you a bunch of free login bonuses in your first few days playing the game. And then after that becomes kind of expensive, but still, you can basically buy into a lotto to get a random premium sticker.
Yeah, and some of the premium stickers get real specific.
Yeah.
Examples include, I believe one sticker I have increases my special attack, like my charge-up attack.
Sure.
By X amount, depending how much of one type of item I have on, specifically hockey-based gear.
Yeah. A lot of them can this is built towards a specific outfit with a specific weapon and stuff like that.
Which is kind of fun. Like, I like the push towards an aesthetic rather than any practicality.
Yes.
That's always entertaining.
I have a premium sticker that doubles the damage from stealth attacks that I do, and it's amazing. I want to clarify, like, sometimes you'll run into enemies who are not facing you. There is, like, a sneak up on them mode, and your stealth attack is not in any way stealthy. Like, you just suplex them. Your character usually screams, and you slam them into the ground and snap their necks. This does not alert other enemies in the area, though. Like, they call it a stealth attack, and they mean it. Regardless of how much noise anything makes, it is still stealthy unless you are shooting a gun. That alerts people. But other than that, you can go fucking nuts. It's very strange.
Yeah, the only things that alert people are just weapons.
Yeah.
Screaming and crying does nothing.
Yep. I'm pretty sure drop kicks don't, even. If you get a running start, you can do a drop kick. You will always miss, but every once in a while when you do hit someone, it's amazing. does a lot of damage. Keeps you knocked on the ground after you hit or miss, so it's generally not worth doing. Anyway, we forgot about those earlier, but...
Yeah, the drop kick, which you do miss, you're down for a little longer. If you hit, you're down for only a couple seconds.
If I ever get, like, a double damage with drop kick sticker, I'm never swinging a weapon again. Like, you know, I don't care if that's the way to succeed.
But if they're not looking, does it count as a stealth?
I don't know, it's hard to say. If those stacked, that'd be incredible. Okay, this is very nitty-gritty. But that's the Mushroom Matriarch. You go there to manage your stickers to get new ones. You can also go to the Choku Funsha, which is the name of the store, but it's just the shop. You know, it's the only shop for gear that really matters.
Yeah, and the shop is empty.
Basically, yes. At the beginning, you can buy just bats and buzzsaws, I think.
Yep.
But as you collect blueprints from higher up in the tower and bring them back, that opens up the ability to R&D and add new things to the shop inventory.
And each time you get one of these blueprints, the R&D that you need to, you know, do for that requires X amount of materials that you pick up along the way, mm-hmm. which at first you become flush with as you accidentally collect all these things. But later on, you become sort of a, like, seeker of items.
Yes.
You're like, how do I find the red metal that gives me the blah, 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 blah,
yes,
blah.
Yes, yes. As with lots of these kinds of games, yeah, they start very generous, then they taper it off. Now, what that means, you know, it works with the rest of the game systems. Like, as you're getting new bodies, you need to level them up, and as, you know, you're leveling up those bodies, you don't want to go to the newest possible floor where the enemies there will just kick your ass. You want to go back a few floors to enemies you can handle a little better, gather materials, upgrade your shit, and then move ahead with better gear and better self. And it all works out. Now, this is, you know, kind of a grindy game. The actual actions you're doing with your hands are fun enough for me to roll with it, with that. And I love watching numbers go up. Anytime you can plus one something, that's pretty great in any context. You know, I'm in the pocket for this kind of thing.
Yeah, and it definitely eventually becomes a game that I don't recommend sitting down and doing hours of play. It's a daily or every few days log in, do a mission or two, and run away.
Pop in every once in a while. You know, set yourself mini goals that will then suit you as you move ahead toward the main goal of getting to the top.
Exactly.
And this place is probably the most vital in doing that. Like, being able to buy a weapon that's at full durability, and then just being at, like, this is the point where you get to have a playstyle, because, you know, if you don't have a reliable source of assault rifles or whatever, you can't really base your plan around having access to assault rifles. And it also makes, like, finding weapons out in the field, like, oh, I just picked up a spear. This is awesome. Now I'm stoked to find the blueprint for spears. Like, the value of blueprints goes up and up and up. It is tantalizing when you find one. And also horrifying that, like, I can't fucking die now. I need to get this home.
Indeed. But, yeah, that's the shop. It's probably the most interacted with spot?
Mm-hmm.
Interacted with part of this hub world for me.
And this is probably true of every shop owner in this game, but the shop owner here is really unpleasant. like, not overtly so, but he has, like, a Hitler mustache. Not that he's supposed to be Hitler-y in any way, really. Just, you know, that kind of uncomfortable, tiny mustache. He wears, like, a space helmet with a graduation cap on top of it, and little John Lennon glasses that block out his eyes, and he just has a very strange mannerisms.
Yeah, it's not even that he's rude or mean. He's just unpleasant to be around and look at.
Yeah. Like, it's implied, despite the fact that in your waiting room you never actually see other people, well, so to speak, but, you know, it's implied that he's just, like, jaded, you know? Like, he's never gets friendly or anything.
Also, I'm pretty sure that his mustache would be a chaplain.
Yeah, let's call it a chaplain. That's much better, actually. yeah, much, much better. There is a vending machine you get access to eventually where, for the most part, if you get duplicates of stickers or just stickers you don't want or duplicate blueprints, you can recycle them into recycle points. And with an absurd amount of those, you can get, like, high-end blueprints or just high-end materials. But that basically just exists so those things don't go to waste.
Yeah, I found use in the recycling, one, as a, you know, higher goal of, like, ooh, I do want that electrical broadsword.
Yeah.
Maybe. But also, you can use the recycling points to get specific component materials that are sometimes kind of grindy to get, and the cost is a little high, but it's nowhere near as high as a blueprint, and that's kind of what I've been using those for.
Yeah. Now, I just stopped picking up blueprints for things I already had because the trade-in amount for those was so low that, like, generally it didn't justify an inventory space to me. But, like, your premium stickers, recycling ones of those that you're just sure you're not going to use is a much better, like, much more efficient way to get those points.
Yeah. And there is definitely a cycle that you could go through to make quick cash, buy a quick platinum sticker, the debate whether you're gonna ever use it and sell it. So there probably is a push you could go through to make a bunch of recycle points and get what you want. But typically I'd say don't and just kind of play the game and you'll get there.
Just do what's convenient at the time and it'll be fine. You know, nothing there is vital, really. Yeah.
Like we said, micro goals. And you'll have a lot of fun.
Yes, absolutely. There is, and this isn't really a shop, but there is an entity called Mingo Head. And every time you come back from the tower, on the elevator or the staircase or whatever, Mingo Head is there to, A, absorb all of the money and stuff you gained and put it in the bank. Like, if you die in the tower, you don't even keep whatever currency you picked up while you were there. But B, you go to Mingo Head to level up. And it's this abhorrent floating brain with just scrappy machinery bits connected to it.
Yeah, it's like rotating tires that it uses as, like, propellers and weird wings and shit.
And it plugs its many tentacles into the back of your neck when you level up to download the improved stats into you somehow.
Somehow. It's genuinely unpleasant to look at and just interact with in any way.
It still is one of your best friends, so to speak.
I mean, here, definitely. But anything that levels me up is my bro.
Yeah.
It's just an ugly bro.
Hey, Mingo. It's just not good, you know? Like, generally, like, and this game takes a lot of cues, I think, from Dark Souls. I haven't played those games really much myself, but to my understanding, in Dark Souls, there's always, like, a kind older woman who helps level you up. Yeah. This is a far departure from that.
This is basically the opposite version of that.
Yes. Eventually, you open the Tokyo Death Metro, which is one of my favorite, like, phrases to say. That's just such a good name that something can have. this is interfaced with by a frightening marionette man who pops out of a console. And this is one of the like friendliest NPCs here to contrast his horrific appearance.
Yeah, and it definitely seems like he should be malicious in some way, but no, he's just a friendly guide through the Death Metro, which he explains is how you interface with the PvP of the game.
Yes.
You, at the start, after you, you know, go through the intro section and unlock the Death Metro, you pick your location if you want to, or I guess you could pick anywhere.
Right.
And then you join that team. We're in Team Michigan. Because... Right.
Yeah, we all signed up for Team Michigan. We didn't entertain the possibility that if we were on different teams, we could fight each other, but...
It also would be difficult to actually see each other.
Right.
Like, it'd be chance-based.
It hardly matters. So, when you go on a raid in the Tokyo Death Metro, you just roll up on someone else's raiding room, and if they have any spare bodies they're not using, you can set them to defense, and then they will stand tight and protect the waiting room, and your goal is to smash up their money bank and their spolithium bank, which is a resource that you use basically to upgrade your own stuff to do more Tokyo Death Metro. It's a pretty self-contained resource.
And it's fun. Yeah. It starts off real easy, like, at the beginning, losing one of these fights seemed almost implausible.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, when enemies get weapons that can kill you in one hit, it becomes a bit of a bother.
Yeah. Raiding on high-level people is very dangerous. But, you know, if you are able to win, you get as many resources as they have. You don't actually take all of their stuff. Like, if you lose on defense in the Tokyo Death Metro, you lose a little bit of your money, but and you never lose your premium currency. No. You never lose death metals. That would ruin this fucking game. Like, absolutely not. But
no, I believe, and I'm not sure what the numbers are, but I have noted that you lose X percentage.
It's like 10% roughly, I think. I don't know.
I think it might even be less, because I currently am running over 100,000 gold in my thing, and I logged in the other day after like 3 weeks of not playing the game and saw that 12 people raided me, and each time it went down, like each time someone stole something, the next guy got a little less and a little little less.
That's probably about how it works, but you never are going to lose like your whole wallet. It does sort of incentivize spending what you have when you get it, you know. It's like you can't really put money in a more secure bank or anything. The Tokyo Death Metro is really fun. Like, if you get a new weapon, you can raid just some low-level loser to try it out on them. And if you're just shy of money to get something, you know, it's the quickest way to bring in some cash.
Yeah, it's also the most effective way to get death metals for free.
Yeah.
Every, like, once a week, they'll have, I don't know, battles between?
I don't think it's scheduled, but, like, when your team, so for our case, Team Michigan, builds up enough of a hate-on with another territory, like, we always seem to have a grudge against Ohio, interestingly enough. Apparently people who play Let It Die care enough about that rivalry to maintain it. So every time your team invades a certain other team, or they invade you, it contributes a little bit to a meter, and when those meters clash, you get into a fight with that team. And basically, just you fighting that team and succeeding contributes to your overall team's success, and if Team Michigan wins, for example, we get a death medal on top of just some cash rewards and stuff.
Yeah, and these cash rewards are pretty good. They're around 10k for gold and splithium. After a couple of weeks, a couple of these, you can get a pretty substantial sum of gold and whatnot.
Yeah.
And as you play through the Death Metro, the more people you fight, the more times you win, the more you're successful in defense, your rank grows, you become a gold member, silver, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's the higher you go, the higher ranking the people you fight are, which is where the difficulty comes in.
Yeah, there's a risk to it, but...
Yeah, start out with a bunch of chumps, sweep them, get to higher ranking folks, and then try not to die.
Yeah. Ultimately, you know, you can't finish the game if you never end up back in the tower, but, like, it is very effective of a way to finance your ascent.
Yes.
Because as you get higher up, you're going to need to be buying high-end weapons and armor and going in kitted out.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't really a place that has, like, a storefront in the base, but the there are a few characters who represent direct hell insurance, and this is where the other sort of money-spending component gets. If that lawnmower outside is coming through, we apologize. There's not much we can do about it, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's that springtime.
Hey, patreon.com/deltacryptidproductions. We can buy sound barriers, eventually. direct hell insurance, you can spend your death metals to expand your home base storage, and this is definitely, I think, the far and away best use for them, is just getting yourself a lot of storage capacity to hold materials and other things that you need. You can also purchase a 1 month long express pass, which just gives you a bunch of little inconveniences. Like, normally you've got to pay to ride the elevator, and the higher
inconveniences.
Conveniences. I don't know. I don't have any great solution to that.
It's just funny.
But normally you have to pay to ride the elevator, and at the beginning of the game, that's fucking chump change. Later on, it gets to be something you have to plan around. If you get the express pass, you can ride the fancy gold express elevator with an attendant there who will chit-chat with you.
It's got a couch in it.
Yes, it's got a couch in it. And if you try to go up to that elevator without an express pass, the door will open, the attendant will just bow to you, and then the door will close immediately on you. Like, you're not welcome here. You also get a discount on paying to get your bodies back when you have an express pass going on, and you get extra personal inventory. Like, it's just...
Which is usually the only thing that I ever consider as a actual, like, boon.
Yeah. If we had, like, if we were real big ballers and had money to throw around, I would just throw on a fucking express pass and mainline this game. As it stands, you know, I don't really have the time or money to do that. But if someone did, I could imagine this being like, because it's not like it makes you actually better at killing enemies or anything. It just mitigates some of the risks of going in.
Yeah. Streamline some of the getting your body back, some of the nitty-gritty parts. Just streamline it so you can get through it faster.
Yeah.
The other big important room, I suppose, is the meat locker.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Which is where you store your free bodies and either interact with them and choose to send them to fight other people or to defend your lair.
Yeah.
I recommend defending the lair.
Yeah, honestly. Defending your lair, you can just set it and forget it. Sending your bodies on expeditions, they will bring back loot that they find. Like, you can rack up animals and mushrooms and stuff. Generally, it's easier to go looking for that stuff than it is to just make money and keep your money secure. So, yeah. And an expedition lasts for 24 hours, but when you set your fighters to defense, it doesn't matter. You know, you never have to check in on them. It's just, you can leave the game alone for forever, and they'll still be helping you out.
Yeah, and while they're in the defense mode, whatever gear they have on will not break. It's just...
Yes.
There.
Yeah, it's only... Well, if you leave them with gear that you just found in the tower, that does deplete, I think. If gear that's bought from the store will never break. So you can, you know, you can set up your guys and give them, like, scary outfits and gear if you want to, and, you know, theme up your team if you feel like it, but that does cost some money.
Upgrading your meat locker basically just increases the storage capacity. You can have another body in there, and that's all done through Splithium.
Yeah.
Same with the banks for Splithium banks and money bank,
yeah,
gold bank,
whatever. Forgot about this. Your financial capacity in the beginning of the game is extremely low. You want to upgrade the size of your bank as early as possible because they purposely give you login bonuses that are too much money for you to actually hold at the beginning to entice you to do those upgrades. they will stop doing that, you know, so be wise with your early expenses.
Mm-hmm. I think that... Oh, mm-hmm. One last room.
Right.
The toilet.
Right, yeah. You can go into the restroom. This, I've never had this happen, really. Like, it doesn't matter much, I don't think, but it's funny that it exists.
It started happening to me a few times recently. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why, if it's what's changed at all, but it's happened more in the past, like, 3 or 4 logins than the entire rest of the time I've played the game.
Interesting.
But yeah, when you go and attack someone through the Death Metro, if you sweep the place, get everybody down, and destroy the banks, and by chance one of the bodies is available for some reason, you can pick them up and take them with you, and put them in your bathroom jail, and suck the splithium out of them.
Yes. Yeah. Every animated body has a capacity of splithium, and you get more efficiently if you take them prisoner, which does take time. Like, sometimes you are put away by the enemy's defenses and are really run up against time to actually smash their bank and stuff, but if you beat a bunch of enemies and have a bunch of time to spare, and you can capture a body, like, it's not always available, but if you can do it, go for it, because you tend to get a cool item at the end of it all, too. The enemy might also invade you and bust open your restroom to take their guy back, but, you know.
Yeah, it's all part of the routine and part of the fun. Like, I'm always excited when there's a body available, it's just like, ooh, mm-hmm. I got to make use of the bathroom?
Yeah. So, just a brief sort of run-through of the enemies that you're facing, for the most part, and I'm okay with this, like, not everyone is, but for the most part, you're just fighting screamers, which are bodies like yours that just are human, have weapons and armor. You know, it'll depend on what floor you're on, the types of things they'll be equipped with, you know, the variety changes as you go along, but generally you're fighting things that can do all the same stuff you do and are just stupid about it and less good.
Yeah, that's the gist of that. But every once in a while, every few floors or so, you'll come up against someone who's a little weird.
Yes.
They have names, Cohen and Jindai and whatever else other names come up. They all typically have a theme, like Cohen's a bruiser,
mm-hmm.
Jindai is a shooter.
And they're all, just to put it in your perspective, they're all like Frankenstein multi-body amalgamations that are, like, you know, pretty gross.
Yeah.
I like that they have names that are just, like, kind of like names. Like, oh, hey, Cohen. You know, it's my buddy Cohen I've run into again to fight and kill. But mini-bosses, just to check your progress. Generally, I find their attacks don't do a ton of damage. Like, they really are balanced, I think, pretty well to, like, learn how to beat them as you are fighting them. For the most part, the arenas they're in are what will fuck you up more than anything else.
Oh, yeah.
So you gotta always keep your wits about you in those kinds of fights, but...
Yeah, figuring out the enemy's pattern in this is critical to success.
Mm-hmm. And they will have occasionally, like, damage resistances. Cohen is the first one you run into and is pretty easy, just the big hulking brute. You can hit him with whatever. Jindai uses hella guns on you and is very resistant to firearms in return, like, you want to get up close and personal with her. And the higher up ones, I haven't fought nearly enough times to actually comment on.
There's one that looks like a weird spider thing.
Go-To-9.
Yeah, shoot it with a gun.
Yeah, stay away from Go-To-9 for sure. Its melee stuff is very, very damaging. And U-10 is up in the 30s, and neither of us are on that level yet, even remotely. The main bosses are dubiously related to the story in any way that I can identify. Like, they all just have their own weird side plot going on.
Yeah, like, they're all supposedly trying to get to the top.
Sure.
Like, I think that's the general
gist. They're like the cons or the czars or whatever of the section of floor. And these are always at 10, 20, 30, 40.
Yeah. And I think the idea was, like, each character, as you go through the floors, you can sometimes find, like, comic book pages. And each one will show you a story of the next boss, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not completed a single one.
We're not going to get way into the Let It Die lore chat here.
God, no. But they each have their own little story. Like, mm-hmm. one of them is just, guy was weird and grafted arms of machines to himself.
Yes.
And people are like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
And
they're all, like, super deranged maniacs.
Yes.
But that's the only real commonality between them. When you run into them, essentially it's just their head gets installed onto a modified mini-boss body. So you're rolling with some attacks that you already know how to deal with, but they always have a few new twists going on as well. I kind of like how that plays out. Like, some folks online I see are, like, upset that there's not a bunch of variety. But to me, your personal character and self is the best variety expressor. You know, the mini-bosses, like, and the big bosses, I'm okay with having a heads-up about them. That's fine.
I don't really care about the variety in them that much. Because, like, the going through the halls, through the entire floors, the fact that you'd never know exactly what's going to happen mm-hmm. is far more exciting than just this boss looks different and does a few different things. Yeah.
To me, the real boss fight level challenge is I've got to get through how many floors to reach the elevator here?
Yeah, that's...
Bullshit! You know, that kind of thing. That's the journey.
That's far more challenging and more rewarding emotionally than yes. just beating a guy one time.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's pretty much the details. There is an ending. We haven't seen it yet. I watched it on YouTube. It is not... Hmm?
There's also a faction that we didn't talk about.
Oh, sure.
The Jackal and, I don't know, constructed enemies?
Yes, yes, yes. There's tubers, who are where more kind of flavor comes out in the moment-to-moment fighting. Because these are, like, machine part having constructed, like rebar metal motherfuckers.
Yeah, I found more lore book random things. I think they were, like, personal robots.
Mm-hmm.
Slave people that some company made for people to use, and now they just are.
Yes.
And I think they have something to do with the Jackals now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The most basic possible tuber is like a Goomba in Mario, like they just exist to be killed effortlessly. Like, huge hordes of them can still be a problem, but for the most part it's just like, oh, switch to your fists to level them up a bit more or whatever, you know, level up whatever weapon you don't need. Higher-end tubers get to be really terrifying.
Yeah, there's one whose body can flip back and forth,
mm-hmm.
and you can only hit their back to do any damage to them.
Yeah.
And it's really annoying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they are associated in some way with the Jackals,
yes.
who are like, they're just humans. Like, I don't even think they're like tech body-ized like you are. I think they're just people with extreme high-end, like, brutal equipment.
Lightsabers and fucking, like, torch yo-yos and shit.
Mm-hmm. And they exist basically to show up on a floor when you've been dicking around there for too long and scare you either ahead or back where you came from.
But yeah, I've never fought one. Don't plan to.
They're supposedly soon. Like, you need to be end boss and beyond to be able to kill them with any real effectiveness. Like, you can get their equipment, you can get the blueprints and stuff. It's just bragging rights, apparently. It's not like you need the Jackal Sword for this mission or whatever, you know? Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely an end goal for me. Mm-hmm. I want to look dope.
Yeah. Okay. And there is an ending. We haven't gotten there, and also, like, the experience is the joy of this game. So, we should open up about this. Like, we've described, like, it took a lot to put what you're doing here into context, but we both really enjoy the loop of this, and, you know, like, give me your feelings, man. What's, you know, what about it? Like, what about this is so special?
Alright, so, I haven't played it in a while. Not, you know, as much as I did when we first got it. Because when we first got it, the learning part of it, the figuring out what the loop is, and starting to amass my treasure hoard,
mm-hmm.
was incredibly satisfying. And it still is. I just haven't gone back due to the fact that I got, you know, switched over to some other games that I haven't played in a while and so on and so forth. But I am excited to go back eventually because, I don't know, there's something super satisfying about the motions and the movements and, like, the physicality of the button pressing.
Mm-hmm.
Just the same thing with Dark Souls and other, like, moment-to-moment combat games where you jump back and dodge and block and hit and run back and block. It's a rhythm and a sort of, like, strategy that you have to develop on the go. You have to actually notice their movements and keep in mind the different combat styles of each weapon. And it's a very satisfying development when you get to an area and you're like, ah, I know what's going on here. I can do this and do this and not take any damage and just mm-hmm. keep rolling through. Especially if the fact that, you know, the guys themselves, they're powerful, but you know how to handle them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the thing. Like, eventually you can get overpowered for certain areas, but as you progress, everything's always going to be about as hard as when it started, if not a little bit more, because you're always going to be going into a new section, into a new whatever, where you're on par or below the standard.
Yeah. If these enemies were smart, you would not be able to play this game. Like, you have to strategize and clown them to make it through.
Yeah, and that's just so gratifying to have to figure out the best entry point to a ambush that you know is around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main thing for me, is that satisfaction.
And I want to say that, like, the weapons you choose for yourself hugely modify what you're describing, the entry point and stuff. Like, you know, if you've got a machete and this and that compared to a hockey stick and this, you know, that and the other thing or whatever, like, your whole deal going forward is going to be very different. Like, yeah. Some weapons are similar to others, but none are quite exact, and you gotta know what you're doing.
Yeah, there are some weapons, you know, that are just better than others, hands down, period.
Sure.
But you can always upgrade them so that they're more or less on the same range of power. For example, I have a broadsword that I can use, or a machete that I've leveled up a couple times to be on par. And I prefer the machete because the moveset just fits my playstyle more, and I can find more uses for it.
I would imagine that of all of the kinds of weapons that are in this game, I mean, I don't know if this many people play, but I could probably find at least one person per weapon who is a diehard of that. Like, a lot of people I hear about really love the iron, and I can't imagine that. But, you know, they all play differently enough to really give you, like, a flexibility, which is me segueing into the shit I really like about this game, that, you know, getting and improving and building towards, like, you know, the excitement of, the most recent sort of run I had, I was finally able to build a blueprint I had in my pocket for a long time, which is the boxing glove on a spring weapon, and just finally being able to, like, I have the materials, craft it, let's fuck around with this. It was so delightful. Like, that is gonna be permanently in my rotation now, the spring-loaded glove. And just, you know, like, I know that you haven't run into that blueprint. You have run into a bunch of other weird weapons that I have not been able to build yet and are just, like, going in different ways. And hearing and seeing about those kinds of experiences is like, you know, I'm in really my own version of this game. And I, you know, I'm just like, am stoked to, like, find out about the new best thing. Now, keep in mind, if you've listened to this review so far and then we're saying stuff about, like, oh yeah, finding out is the best part, like, don't worry about it. You still need to find out with your hands what it is all about. Having these things spoiled might help you maybe remember something we said to make a pro move, but ultimately, like, you've got to get a handle on it your own way for it to matter.
Yeah, the finding out that, oh, blueprints are found here and sent here and you can do them with blah blah, that's not the finding out that is even remotely relevant. The finding out is the, ooh, alright, so if I do things around here, I could get one of these blueprints, and those weapons do this, which means I can avoid getting hit by doing this, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Yeah, and just the, like, the building up of your resources, like, you research better versions of your weapons, and bring in materials, and level up your skills, and all of that stuff, it is the right combination of, like, yes, I am increasing these things, like, I am moving along, I can see the impact of the things I'm doing and building, while not ever getting to a point where it's like, okay, I gotta get out my notebook and my calculator to make the next best plan. Like, you just go in and do the game, and you will end up with stuff that lets you make cool decisions and improve yourself. And, like, the moment-to-moment playing is like you're playing a fun action game. You don't, like, there are other things that have extreme numbers complexity that it's, like, too much, and once you're doing work, that's a real problem. But it never feels like work. You still are reaping these benefits, though.
Yeah. And another thing that I think is, I'm going to say, unique to this game, is that in most games, you know, your character levels up, they get stronger, and it's awesome. Like, in Mass Effect, you can level up your stuff and eventually just destroy motherfuckers with a blink.
Mm-hmm.
It's lovely. Love getting to those higher levels. In this game, things level up, sure, and it's definitely beneficial to have a higher level character, but it's kind of meaningless. Mm-hmm. Like, levels are whatever they mean in this game. They're not really the main thing. The main thing is getting experience with a weapon, which does level up, it gets stronger, but it makes it representative and, like, truly representative of you as a player getting better.
Yeah.
And this game, I think, is unique in the way that it does that by genuinely making you feel with the numbers that it displays that you are improving.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
your character.
Your character rises up to meet you. It cannot... Like, you'll never get to a point that's in, like, Pokemon, where you've got your level 100 Charizard, and you just cannot lose a fight, even if you fucking wanted to. Like, you can always lose. You yes. gotta stay alert.
Exactly. And I think that's something that should be praised.
Yeah.
Because not enough games make me feel like I'm the thing that improved.
Mm-hmm. And you really do. Like, that's what it's all about. So, and also, I really like Uncle Death, that... Like I said at the beginning, if this whole thing were framed up as like a, you are the serious guy who has to do the quest, I probably would have bounced off. But because they set the whole thing in with like, hey, listen, everything you're about to do is a big fucking joke, okay? And I was like, great, yeah, I'm laughing. You know, it just, that goes a long way for me.
Mm-hmm. It is a little aesthetically kind of... grotesque.
Yeah.
Which we have mentioned a few times.
I love that stuff, unironically. I know that's not, as always, a straight shot for you, but...
It's hit or miss for me. Like, I dig it in Bloodborne, but less so in many other things. I think in this one, it's a hit, because, like, the ambiance in the sewer, like, it really added to the effect of, God, when am I gonna get to the next fucking elevator? When am I gonna get to the next safe zone? And those grungy kind of settings kind of add to that
mm-hmm.
desperation to find your way to a safe zone.
And I'm not going to say that this is like making a grand statement about video games, but it is kind of funny to just be like, yep, here we are. Gruesome grime and violence. We're playing a video game, baby. Ooh. Like, and everyone's just stoked about it. Like that, it's a little funny to me. Again, it's not like... I couldn't write a dissertation about this, but...
I mean, I feel like there's something here, though, especially with its title and the general gameplay loop of just, like, as something horrible is going to happen to you, it's just, let it happen.
Yeah.
We'll fix it in post.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, oh, shit, my weapon broke. Whatever. Like, you learn to attach little consequence to any individual thing, even if it's just like, oh, I'm fucking dead. Well, I've got to go get myself back now, you know? Nothing, like... You are taught to not really value anything in a way that makes everything that comes to you, like, cool, bonus. You know, that exceeds my expectations. Mm-hmm. It is just good framing.
Yeah, very, very positive. Do you want to wrap this up
I'm pretty tight. I would love to wrap it up with a good old-fashioned, what did we learn?
What did I learn? Never use the grenade launcher for anything closer than 3 feet.
Yeah, I blow myself up in this game a whole lot. We've taught each other that lesson. I'm going to go with, you got to be really, really careful when you're picking the mushrooms. Again, I got to say this. Like, real life, make sure you know what you're about to eat before you eat it. Don't just reach in haphazardly to a mushroom bag and eat whatever's there. Watch out for explosions, watch out for mushrooms. Just watch out. We love you.